One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Hey, everybody. I have a special announcement to make. You may have heard me say this on my YMH episode, but I am starting a new podcast. It's going to be right here on this YouTube channel. It's called The Way Back. It drops Thursday, January 4th, and it will be a weekly pod every Thursday moving forward after that. All right. It's a nostalgia podcast. It's a short one too. It's a quick hitter, no more than 30-minute episodes with some of your favorite guests in comedy and podcasting. We already have a ton of them recorded. I'm very excited to do this. If you're a big fan of the Crab Feast, if you're a big fan of the Honeydew, I know you're going to be a big fan of this show. It's just something I've always thought about, you know, and the set is the back seat of that old school station wagon, facing traffic, looking that way. All right. It's the way back because we're sitting in the way back and we're looking back on things. And here's a fun teaser just to get you excited about the idea. Check this out. It's The Way Back with Ryan Sickler right here on my YouTube channel every Thursday beginning January 4th.
What would you say were like your favorite parts of growing up?
We did a lot of playing with fire.
It was the 80s. We were feral kids. You know
we'd throw rocks at cars whipping
by. My brother grew some of the best pot in Northern California.
We played another drinking game called Drinking and Driving.
It left a crater.
It was danger all the time.
And
just
that's
danger.
When I started popping up.
Obviously, there's some level of autism here.
I was like, I'm just going to put the artillery shells in the backseat.
Wait, no!
Oh, that's a nice little throwback. Good times.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Nightpants Studios. I'm Ryan Sickler, RyanSickler.com, and Ryan Sickler on all your social media. I'm kicking this episode off the same way I kick off every episode by saying thank you. Thank you for supporting the show. Thank you for watching. I don't care if you're new here or if you've been here. Thank you for the support. Please subscribe. Hit the subscribe button. It's a free way to help the show. And if you got to have more, then trust me, check out the Patreon. It's called The Honeydew with Y'all, and it's this show with y'all. It's $5. You're getting The Honeydew a day early. You're getting it ad-free, no extra cost. You get audio. You get video to the entire back catalog of the wildest stories you've ever heard in your life. It's worth it. Cup of coffee to try one time. Trust me on this. All right. If you're looking for a new podcast to listen to, go check out my old podcast, The Crab Feast. I love it. Look, man, it's been done for almost 5 years and it still has a cult following. And the library is going to do over 1 million downloads this year. That's what I'm talking about. So it's got everybody you love in comedy on it. Check it out. All right. Now you guys know what we're doing over here. We're highlighting the lowlights. I always say these are the stories behind the storytellers. And I'm very excited to have today's guest on here for the first time. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mike Vecchione. Welcome to the Honeydew.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. Thank you, buddy.
It's good to have you here, bro. It's long overdue, actually.
No, I appreciate it. I appreciate being on.
Well, it's great to have you here. And before we get into any of the stuff we're going to talk about, plug, promote, everything and anything, Mike Vecchione, please.
First of all, I'm at Comic Mike V on all social media platforms, at Comic Mike V. MikeVecchione.com for dates. I have a podcast called Mike Vecchione Investigates on Gas Digital. You can get it on Apple, iTunes. And on my special is called The Attractives. It's on YouTube right now.
It's a great special.
Thank you, buddy.
Over a million views. Go check that one out. Is that everything?
Yeah, that's everything. MikeVecchione.com for dates.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Where can I get tickets? All right, MikeVecchione.com. It's good to have you here. I really got to sit and talk with you during your Epic special.
Right.
And I remember some of the things we talked about, but not everything, obviously. And again, you showed up and I was like, you know, I thought you were, you look Bronx to me. And you're like, nah, I'm Youngstown, Ohio. And I'm like, huh? You do not have.
People get
know.
Confused. They go, are there in New York? They go, there's Italians in Ohio. And then I get defensive. I go, who do you think built this country? Huh? Who do you think built it? And they go, all right, calm down. I go, no, you calm down. No, you calm down. Yeah. I like to go right, you know.
It's pretty. That's why I like you, dude. My whole family's Italian. The only one that wasn't was my dad's dad, who's Sickler. Everyone else is DeMemo, DeVito, and everything is that. Everything's
I love 0 to 100.
Yes,
I love 0 to 100.
What do you mean by talking about? Instantly.
You're like, hey, what's going on? You want a cup of coffee? What do you mean? What do you mean?
Dude.
I love that.
At my younger brother's wedding, I have a twin brother. We're fraternal twins. We're fucking just finally had enough. Enough of each other, enough of the bullshit. Like, this wedding was in Jamaica, and he said, I'm going to put my credit card down, and so good. I'm going to put my credit card down. You can pay me back. And I was like, yeah, no problem. So I don't know what happened, but their card got declined. And his wife came up to him and started to tell him. He didn't let her finish the whole story. Started to say, hey, we put our charges and your brother's charges on our card, and our card got declined. So he's like, what? He comes, listen, it's a hill. He comes marching up this hillside of Jamaica. It's beautiful. It's called Round Hill. Like, they're like, Paul McCartney stays here, and, you know, we have no business being here. You know what I mean? With our bullshit, he's fucking trucking up the hill. And it's guys we are still close with from middle school and their wives. The wives are new to us. The guys from middle school, he comes up, he's like, listen, motherfucker. And then the whole hillside can hear this. And I'm looking at him. I'm just as surprised as everybody else. Listen, motherfucker, you put your goddamn shit on our car. Now you fucked everything up. And his wife's going, Derek. Now he's thinking she's trying to get him to calm down. He's like, no. And he's just going on. And he's like, this is the last fucking time we ever vacation together. And I'm being calm at first. And I'm just like, this is the first time we've ever vacationed together.
And the last.
This is it. And he's going nuts. And he's like, you stupid motherfucker. And he's screaming at a level. But it's like, you're a fucking dick. You know what I mean? But these women are like, oh my God, they're about to rip each other's throats out. And their husbands are like, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. You know, and they're scared. It's like, it's fine. And he's huffing and puffing because he had come up that hill so fast.
Right.
You piece of shit. And Ray's going off. And his wife's going, Derek. Derek. He's like, no. And she finally goes, Derek. They put everything on his card. We owe him money.
Oh, my God.
And he's like, what? She goes, I'm trying to tell you, we owe your brother money. I go, what? Oh, y'all owe me right now? Oh, man. This motherfucker took off down the hill. He didn't say shit. Everyone up there is like, oh, my fucking God. I'm like, that's just totally, that's typical. Like, so then he knows he's got to come back up and eat fucking crow. And you see him about 30 minutes later, just slow ass walking up that mountain. And he gets to the top and he's got to make the most humbling, embarrassing apology.
Yeah. I would do it during a toast.
That's why you're a comedian,
like to raise my glass. But before we get to the bride and groom, I just want to say.
This motherfucker is trying to apologize, not to me only, but to everyone for the seed he's caused.
It's so great.
But he's so out of breath and he's got cotton mouth. He's like, I just want to say, like, it is a hill like this. And he's like, can I get a drink? And I go, no. Anyone gets up and gets him a fucking drink is going to have to deal with me. He doesn't get a fucking drink. Finish saying what you're going to say. And he is just like, just want to say I'm sorry. Like, he had to apologize.
That's
like that.
So great.
To the whole place.
I think everybody should have lined up and just gone gut or head and then take a shot at him. Just gut her head. Let's go.
Italian like that, nonstop. Just everything. I remember my cousin's wife going, "You argue just like your cousin." I go, "What do you mean?" She's like, "Well, right away, it's like, listen, asshole." You know, anybody else is normal is like,
"Yeah,
man, what? I'm not listening to anything." You're like, "What? What's the matter with that?" Dude, tell me about growing up, because I do know I've had Tony Hinchcliffe on, who I believe was also Youngstown
and
Italian mafia style Youngstown, Ohio.
Youngstown was a big mob town, like in the 50s and 60s. There's nothing there now, I don't think. But
was it an original mob town, or was it like that's where a lot of guys relocated once shit got?
No, I think it was an original mob town. I think it was just because the steel industry and unions and. It just was wild back then. You watch documentaries about it. They used to blow each other up, which is not something they did in New York too much. It's more of like a Sicilian thing, car bombs. But in Youngstown, they would do it all the time. They blow fighting over mostly gambling operations, I think, loan sharking. But it's all gone now. But
and what did your parents do growing up? What did they work in Youngstown?
My father was a mushroom farmer. And canning operation. My grandfather lived on the east side of Youngstown when my father was growing up. And
we're talking about regular mushrooms, though, right?
Not regular mushrooms. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Mushroom and what else?
Mushroom growing and canning operation. And so he had a convenience store. He had a convenience store in Youngstown. My grandfather growing up, Frankie's Prepared Foods.
Shit's prepared, man.
Yeah, you know, Frankie's
ready
Market,
for whatever.
Frankie's Prepared
Is that
Foods.
Their tagline?
Ready for whatever. Yeah. So he has this, and then he wanted to get into canning spaghetti sauce, but that's when Ragu came in and took over the market. So he had to pivot. So instead of spaghetti sauce, he started canning mushrooms, and then it became successful. And he's like, "Why am I buying all these mushrooms? I have land out here. I'll buy the land. I'll build a growing operation and then grow and can the mushrooms." So that's what we were doing. And it's mushrooms grow indoors.
So you know a little bit about growing mushrooms.
I know very little about it.
But were around this. I was growing around up as a kid. Yeah. No shit. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Have you ever met anyone else that's ever even done that?
There's like Italians in Pennsylvania who also have a mushroom farm. I think their name is Shiraki. I'm not sure, but it's like Kennett Square area. Like those are like the competing mushroom farms. But I think there's still mushroom farms in Kennett Square, but most of the market is Chinese mushroom, like Asian.
So was passed on to your father?
No. What happened was my grandfather and my father and my aunt and my uncle were all in the business together, and my father and grandfather couldn't get along. My grandfather was a tough guy to deal with. He was old school Italian, you know, he was born here, but they had come over. Whole story. His father was a musician. He died at an early age. It was him, and his mother didn't speak any English, so he had three brothers and sisters and had to like just drop out of eighth grade and get a job.
Eighth grade.
Yeah. So he had to figure it out. And, you know, bipolar disorder, that my great grandmother had bipolar disorder. And as a result, my grandfather had it. So he's dealing with that. And then there's no safety net at that time. So if like you don't work and you don't make money, then just everybody starves. So it was, I'm sure, a wild time. Just from the stories that I've heard, it was absolutely wild. So he had that like kind of chip on his shoulder, like build it from the ground up type, you know, there was no free lunch for me. There shouldn't be a free lunch for anyone type thing. So, and he was hard. He was a hard guy. And my father just wanted love and approval and never got it from him, you know, until the very, very end. So, so as a result, they were trying to work in the business together, and it blew up. And in 1981, we moved to Boca Raton, Florida.
That's very Italian, bro. It's Boca.
My father was basically like, "I just don't want to be here anymore. It's cold." We had no ties to Florida. Yeah. It was just like, "I'm out. I'm going to the most beautiful place." And my father hated the cold weather. He hated icy roads. He hated everything about it. You know how your emotions, it just gets morphed into one thing. He hated the relationship and working for his father and the way he was treated. And he morphed all of that somehow into the weather and into like, he was like, "I'm just going to the most beautiful place. And I just want to be out of here. Pick this up." and we moved to Boca Raton, Florida.
And how old were you at that point?
I was nine.
Okay, so you definitely remember that.
Yeah, I remember that move because in Ohio, we had a little bit of money because we were in a family business. We lived in a big house, like, you know. And then when we moved, I could see the drop. Even though we moved, Boca Raton is known as a wealthy place. We went back to like, we don't have anything.
Jason, you know?
Yeah, yeah. We lived on the Delray Beach border, and I remember I remember being like, oh, we don't have we couldn't turn the air conditioning on. We couldn't pay the air conditioning bill, and it was, you know, we're from Ohio and it's Florida. It's a Florida summer. So I remember the ceiling fans, and I remember going into the bathroom and splashing cold water on my face and then keeping the ceiling fan on in order to go to sleep at night. So it's like you would think Boca Raton money, but we went the opposite way. Mm-hmm. You know,
how'd you get to Florida? Drive?
We drove.
What'd you drive?
I don't remember the car. We had I remember we had a bunch of cars because they kept breaking down. We were buying American car, they were breaking down. That's like early 80s at the time. And so we bought a Toyota van.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody just shit on us for buying a Toyota. They're like, you're buying a Japanese car. This is American. And, and it's like, hey, dude, we can't have the car. We don't have any money. Like, the car can't be in the shop every 2 weeks. And I remember that Toyota van, we put like 150,000 miles on it.
It's
was
a lawnmower. Unbelievable. Do whatever the fuck you want.
It was
with
so
those.
Good. Yeah. So we drove down in that, and sometimes we didn't, like, I remember we didn't have the money to stay in hotels sometimes, so we'd pull over to a rest stop and just sleep, you know? Mm-hmm. And I remember just, like, being in the past, I remember sleeping in the driver's side, like, sleeping and being mad that we didn't get to go to a hotel and having to sleep in the car, and I remember being mad, and then my father said, you were mad, and then just passed out, like, on him. He was in the passenger side, but it was all good. It was all good.
And how long do you stay in Boca?
I stayed there until I was 13.
So 4 years.
Yeah, and then we moved. I did third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grade.
Okay, so you made some friends down
third through seventh.
You playing sports and all that, like really getting in the community and stuff.
Yeah, well, I played football, contact football, and that's why. People are like, you can't have kids play contact football. And I go, I get it, man. I get the science and I get it. But I have to say, there's something about playing a contact sport that is at a young age that's different than playing a non-contact sport. Mm-hmm. It builds like tenacity and grit. And there's something mentally that you have to prepare for when you go into a contact sport at a young age. You have to mentally prepare yourself.
There's so much
it.
Going on.
Because if it's just a skills game, you don't have to mentally prepare.
Checkers ain't gonna fucking
the way that you do when you go. Even
like,
I remember,
let's play checkers while we punch each other in the face. You're
yeah,
like, that's
there's
a
something
game.
About because that's a different you game. Have to mentally prepare for that contact, for that impact. And I remember at 9 years old, like going to not wanting to go to practice and having to suck it up and go to practice because we never were able to quit anything mid-year. So going to practice and having to mentally save energy during the day and mentally prepare myself for what was going to happen at practice. And it's like drills, the Oklahoma drills, like that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, and now I went back to my high school years ago and they don't practice in pads during the week.
Is that right?
Yeah, because they were like, it's too many injuries. And I understand it, but I was like, this would have changed my whole high school experience, not playing in pads during the week. We hit during the week. We hit during the week. And like I said, like in high school, whatever, you'd go to school and be like, I got practice tonight. So I can't expend too much energy because I have to mentally prepare myself for
to get my ass
the contact that's coming, you know? And I wrestled also late. That was later on. And
see, that was
Ohio.
The sport for me too. Like I played everything. I played soccer, football, baseball, basketball, lacrosse, all my high school. I didn't play football. I played soccer. They wouldn't let me double up. But baseball, but wrestling was the one where, like of anything in my life, I've been able to exert my anger, my frustration.
Right.
And it's the one sport where like, that's the one where if you cheat, you're only cheating yourself.
That's
the one.
Yeah.
There's no one behind you that ball got tipped. I caught it. You missed that ground ball. I got it.
Yeah. I love the camaraderie of football, but wrestling is really who you find out who you are.
You find out who you are. That's right.
So I love
Not
that.
Not you as a teammate, you as an individual. Right. And what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are.
And I was not the best athlete. I was not the best
athlete.
Were
you a good wrestler? You got a wrestler's body.
Yeah, I was good for my area or whatever, but there was guys I wrestled with throughout the year who were, I mean, just crazy talented. And those guys, like, especially in college, I went to Penn State. I wrestled for a year.
Did you really?
Yeah.
No shit. You're good then.
Well, no, I was good for my area, and I went to Penn State. And
look, you don't get to a D1 school and play a sport and not be good.
Well, the thing is enduring that year, I mean, it was the training. Because Florida wasn't known as a good wrestling state. Ohio, Pennsylvania, those guys coming from those states. Still a big jump to go to that program, that Penn State program, which is phenomenal now. But even when we were like third in the country with the year I wrestled. So it was very tough. All Americans, all up and down the lineup. But you could be good for your, I was good in my, I placed in states in Florida. I went to the finals and placed second. And then when I went to Penn State, it was just such a shock, such a culture shock. It's like, I mean, I prided myself on working hard in high school. But and when you go to college, like everybody works hard. Everybody works. Everybody puts in a massive, like everybody does 10 times what you did in high school.
Right.
And these are guys who are super talented. And, a lot of the super talented guys, I think about this sometimes. Like I had my own experience with wrestling with the physical capabilities that I had. But some of the guys who were super talented, they had a different experience. I think not that they didn't work hard, but I think things just came easier to those guys. And that's a good thing for them in that moment. But it's a different thing in terms of like looking back and learning life lessons from it. Like, you know, I had a lot of adversity when I wrestled. Like I would get pinned. I was wrestling varsity as a sophomore, and I would get...
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Pinned. In Florida, I would get pinned, and being pinned in an auditorium full of people is crazy. You know what I mean? It's like humiliating. So
just out there.
In
high school, we had a really good wrestling culture. Like they would put us in the main gym where basketball
played. Is Colorado?
This is Maryland.
So, oh, Maryland.
And just high school too.
Okay.
And it was mats that covered the whole fucking gym.
Yeah.
And one circle in the middle, just like Vision Quest. And we had the bell
that
would come down.
Yeah.
They would turn all the lights off in the gym, and you would get humiliated under the fucking spotlight while the gym is packed.
That's great. I'll do you one better. We had that spotlight, and they would have in Florida, they would have in-school matches. So they would do like an assembly where they let all the kids into the match, seventh period, and you would wrestle in front of the entire school while school was in session. So you get pinned in one of those. It's like you're just hearing about
it. Math class later. Yeah.
Even your teachers are like, hey, what's going on?
What was that all about, man? Yeah. That's great. But I also imagine that sport. I know what it did. I know what my backstory is, and I know what wrestling did for me as a person. It also helped me be able to be like, okay, I can take a fucking headbutt to the face. I can get punched. I can get, banged up. But I also can hang out here. Somebody in my weight class, I'm all right. I can handle myself.
But I imagine bouncing from, because you said you went from Youngstown to Florida.
Right.
Then you went back to Youngstown. Then you went back to Florida?
Back to Florida.
Your dad and grandfather make it up and break it up.
Well, yes, basically, that's what it was.
Yeah,
that's what it was. So, we go to Florida, and then my father has a couple businesses that fail, and then so he just is without a job, and so my grandfather comes down. His business is not doing well because my father was good at the business and really put his heart and soul into it, wanting to get that approval from his father. So my grandfather comes down, humbles himself, comes down, asked my father to come back. My father goes, well, I need a contract. I need it in writing. Like, I can't, this emotional roller coaster, because my grandpa was dealing with his own mental health issues, which were not known about back then. So he signs a contract and we move back. And when we moved back, we moved to a town where my mother is from, which is a small town. It's such a small town. My mother's family is the first Italians in the town.
No way.
Yeah, it's great.
Really?
It's That's really awesome. Classic.
Yeah, hell yeah.
First Italians in the town. And I got to like walk to school in Florida. I couldn't walk to school. I walked to school. I could, you know, I really loved being there. And it was for 2 years. And that's where I learned to wrestle 8th and 9th grade. And the programs were really good in Ohio. And then we moved. And then, you know, things went sideways again. My grandfather like screamed at my bed, threw a cup of coffee in his face. And my father's like, we're out of here. We're out of here. So
back to Boca, baby.
Back to Boca. So we went back to Boca. And
but you're also now going back to a community where you know people. Right?
I know people, but I went to different schools. I went to a different middle school. So I was going to a different high school. I went to a high school in middle school in another town. And then I went to high school in Boca. I went to Boca Raton Community High School. And I got to say, both places were unbelievable. I have friends to this day from both.
You do,
places.
From both.
Yeah. I mean, Ohio was great friends and a great group of people. And Florida was the same. So I loved them both. Yeah. And, but wrestling is, it really, for me,
it
taught me.
It helped you bouncing around and just being able to know you can handle yourself out there.
Well, the thing is now when I look back at the wrestling, because of the business we're in, you know, it's like you're up, you're down. This could be an opportunity. Maybe not. There's money coming here. There's no money for a while. It's like tumultuous, whatever. So that's always in the back of my mind to be like, oh, I cut weight. I cut a lot of weight. And that does something mentally to you too. It's like, if I can do that, I can be in a gutter and figure it out. Like I can be in a gutter and be able to figure it out because of the experiences that I had during wrestling.
Yeah,
so that's
great.
What it gives you. It gives you the self-discipline is unbelievable. And also I learned stuff, you know, the mental toughness that it takes, you know, to even get through a practice, forget matches and competing and all that stuff. But like the practices were brutal. I thought the first couple times wrestling, going to a wrestling practice, I thought we were being punished. I thought the whole practice was a punishment.
I
was like, what did we do wrong? Does this guy hate, because we came from football? It's like, does this coach hate football players? Like, no, this is what it is. So it was on another level of difficulty.
Yeah.
Which I actually grew to like. You know, that not everybody could do it. And I don't know if it's happening now or happened where you came from, but there was a real rivalry between basketball and wrestling. And because all of the blue chip, the glory sport was basketball. Mm. So during the winter, all the kids who would go out for basketball and then they would get cut. And then the wrestling coaches would be like, why don't you guys, we don't cut anybody. Come over here. And we would get some guys who ended up being very successful at wrestling because they got cut from basketball. And there was always that rivalry. Like, even in college, I remember when I was at Penn State, we would go through you'd have to schedule a training session in the weight room. It's a half hour. And what they do is they take you through stations. It's a half hour course. And what you do is you get on like the lat pull down and you doom to exhaustion. And then when you can't do it, he helps you with two. And then they pull the pin and they go two or three lighter, and then you do as many as you can from there, and they let you do two or three to exhaustion, and then they pull the pin again, and then you do a couple more till you can't get any, and then that's one exercise, and then you move to the next one. And that, by the time you got through it, at the beginning of it, you would be throwing up on the second or third exercise. But by the time you would get used to it and get through it, And that's another thing. You have to mentally prepare yourself to go through that because you know you're going to suffer. The whole point is to suffer through it and to mentally callous your mind in order to get through it. So just going there and do it. I remember going with the trainer and after like the second exercise, he goes, do you want water? I go, dude, let's just go. Let's go. And he goes, you guys are so much, because they would do it with the basketball team too. He goes, you guys are so much more mentally tough than the basketball players. He's like, you guys, because I could tell, like, I said something that everybody else, all the other wrestlers said, like, let's just go,
come
dude.
On, let's go.
Let's go. Yeah. And he goes, oh my God, you guys are the best. They loved us. You know what I mean? But basketball was the glory sport. Wrestling was the sport that was gritty. We were gritty.
And was your dad supportive of all that stuff?
He was supportive of it. Yeah. He didn't know anything much about the sport, but I loved it because he was so involved in football and like that wrestling was my thing. That he didn't really understand, yeah. And I learned on my own. So it was like my own little personal thing.
Yeah.
So I love that.
Yeah, me too. That's great you say it that way because I'm thinking about it now. Yeah.
But the life lessons, I mean, I can't stress enough like the life lessons from wrestling. It's just, it pays off monumentally in your life. So when you're, especially in your life, when you're going through adversity and tough times and girls break up with you and you have no money, it's like, you still have that thing in the back of your mind where it's like, oh, I endured this level of suffering before. There's no reason I can't endure this mm-hmm. and figure it out and come out on top. It's really, really huge.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, because I remember this from your special, and we just talked about your dad, but your dad passed not too long ago, right?
Yeah.
And what happened?
Well, we had a tumultuous relationship because...
You did? You and your dad?
Yeah. We did. Okay. We did it. He was always very loving, so he was very emotional with me and very loving, because I think it was because his father, he wanted this approval from his father and never got it. So he made a conscious decision to be like, I'm not going to be that way with my kids. I'm going to be openly loving to the point of like, he was like super emotional with us. So he was that way. And he was very involved in all of our activities and supportive. He would coach teams and do all that stuff. But he was tumultuous. He had his own issues. So he was tumultuous, but I knew I was loved and everything. And then I think what happened when I was 18, when I was in college, my grandfather passed and they made peace on my grandfather's deathbed.
Did they?
They made peace, yeah.
Were you there to see that?
I wasn't there to see it. It was in Ohio, it was in Florida.
Did you ever talk to your dad about it?
Yeah, he said he basically said that they made peace. Yeah. My grandfather was sick and my father ended up taking care of him.
That's
and
nice.
in that taking care, like taking him in the shower, washing him, all that stuff. It's like it really they made peace. And
can I ask you this? Did their fractured relationship ever affect your relationship with your grandfather?
Yeah, it actually did, because when we were leaving the second to come back for the second time, I was 13, so I knew what was happening, and my grandfather pulled me aside, which is very unlike him, and tried to explain to me that it wasn't his fault, that my father had a hard head and he doesn't listen. And I didn't have the skill set or the emotional intelligence to call him out and be like, hey, what you're doing is like, if it was now or something, or when I was an adult, I would be like, hey, you have to show him love. He obviously starving for affection here. He just wants your approval. There's no cost involved in you putting your arms around him. Well, I'm not built that way. It's like, you figure it out. Like, it just, he's looking for that. This all could be avoided. This whole thing could be avoided if you would just give him approval and just put your arms around him. I mean, just tell him you love him. It's crazy how this
isn't that crazy how that something that simple could solve so many things.
Yeah.
Just a hug.
Just a hug.
I love you,
but
thank you.
It wasn't. He was just so like, it's not in my wheelhouse to do this.
Right.
But I didn't have the emotional intelligence at the time, or the wasn't articulate enough to say that, or frankly, didn't have the balls because I was intimidated. He was an intimidating guy to do that, and I was just like, okay, you know, I was upset about having to leave all my friends and leave all the programs I was involved with in Ohio and family to go back to Florida, which I didn't really want to go back.
Did you know that traditional antidepressants only work for about 40 to 60% of people? They can also come with heavy side effects, make you feel numb, and they might require taking a daily pill for the rest of your life. We need more and better alternatives. There's no quick fix for anxiety and depression, but there could be something to unlock your brain, a new way of thinking about and seeing the world. Maybe that thing is guided ketamine therapy from MindBloom. There's a new tool to improve your mental health, at-home ketamine therapy. MindBloom is the leader in at-home ketamine therapy, having safely helped thousands of people overcome their anxiety and depression. Unlike traditional talk therapy, ketamine works quickly and doesn't have the unpleasant side effects of traditional antidepressants. In a study of over 1,200 MindBloom clients, 89% reported improvements in their anxiety and depression after only 4 sessions. Right now, MindBloom is offering my listeners $100 off your first 6-session program when you sign up at mindbloom.com/honeydew and use promo code honeydew. Take the first step and break free from your anxiety and depression with MindBloom. mindbloom.com/honeydew and use promo code honeydew. Now, let's get back to the dew.
So
what happened with you and your dad?
So when my grandfather died, a weird shift happened where my father kind of quickly forgot how much he hated the way he was treated, and then kind of like took that mantle as the patriarch of the family and started weirdly kind of like doing the things to some extent that my grandfather did, where being like hard on issues where he was never hard before. And not being as understanding as he was when I was growing up, because it was right in his face. He hated it so much from his father. So we had problems because I would go home to visit, and it would start very loving. It would be a pattern. It would start very loving for a couple of days. I miss you. I love you. Blah blah blah. And then after about 2 days, I feel the tension start to build. And then something would happen and he would just explode and we'd be in a huge fight, and that would happen. And then that took place for a couple of days. And then right before I left, we would make up and everything would be fine again. And that pattern kind of happened every time I went home, to the point where my sister was like, stop coming home. Like, stop coming home. It's like triggering something in him, and it's never pleasant. And it almost was like, you're pulled in different directions, because I was like, I love my father, and respect with Italians, I'm sure you know, is like a big thing. It's like, and anytime anything would get tumultuous, he'd be like, I'm your father. You respect me. I'm your father. It's like, yeah, it works both ways. You can't just, I'm not a punching bag either. Mm-hmm. You can't just explode just on me and older, say anything right, to me. Yeah. It's like, that's not the way you treat someone you love. I know all this now, but back then I just knew I didn't like what was happening. So I was like, and also I was like, why does it have to be this way? Why? We're making it hard for no reason. To one point we got into a fight and he was like, we were making up. I go, I have to come here and stay in a hotel. Like, I can't stay here. He goes, Mike, that would break my heart. I go, break your heart. It's driving me crazy. It's literally driving me crazy. What we're doing here. None of this is necessary. None of it. I don't know what we're doing. And, he'd be like, Mike, we got to go through this. I'm like, we don't have to go through this at all. This is all crazy. You know, he was just in this mind. You know, we live out our patterns, you know, our mind patterns, the way he was raised, what he thought was love. That's what he thought was love. And he just goes, instead of like pulling back from it and go, oh, this doesn't have to be this way. The presence of mind, like, he just kept running on that pattern. And after a while, I just had to be like, there was no way to deal with it other than just let him abuse me or fight back. And then it was going to be on. So I chose the second thing. I was like, let it just be on then, you know? So
how long was that?
That was a good period of, I would say 18, 19 years old till I was 40.
Oh shit.
Yeah. That would happen.
You're talking about a couple decades.
Yeah.
Oh man.
But in between, it's like, I love, you know, love and, but then when it would go south, it would just, you know, it was tumultuous. See, in every relationship, I think that there's like somebody who's tumultuous and then somebody who's like an anchor. My mother was like an anchor, school teacher, 40 plus years, just kept the family together, solid, logical. My father was emotional, tumultuous. Great. I mean, people loved him. Personality, had sales jobs. People loved, he would sell great because of his personality, and people loved him. But he was just, he was tumultuous at times, you know. But I, the good thing about my child, I always knew I was loved. I always knew I was loved and supported. We went through our we went through it, you know, obviously, but I always knew that I was, and my father made no bones about showing love and affection and emotion and like kissing us, telling us he loved us. There was never any of those issues. So I'm grateful for that. Everybody gets it different. You know what I mean? I think. So I was really fortunate to have that.
So that 20 years goes by, yeah, and what happens? What makes you finally reconcile?
We get into a huge, a really big fight. And
how old are you? How old are you at
this
point?
I'm 40 at this point.
You're
I'm 40.
Goddamn, we're going back and forth. Fucking man.
And we get into a really, really big fight. I can't go into what it's over, but it's a really big one. And I felt really angry that he came at me in this certain kind of way over this issue. And I just said, I'm not talking to you again. I don't deserve this. This is crazy. I had it. I'm not talking to you again. And I told my mother, because my mother was supporting
Were they still together at the
time? Yeah, still together. Okay. So supporting his position, I said, I'm not talking to either of you. So 8 months, I didn't talk to them, which is crazy in my family.
Is that?
Yeah.
8 months.
8 months. I was like, not talking to either of them.
Would they call and stuff?
Yeah, my mom will call. My mom will call. My mom will call. And my mom's like, I don't care what you say. I'm still calling you. I go, I'm not talking to either of you. What you did was wrong. And have the presence of mind to know that you're wrong and apologize. And if you apologize, I'll forgive you.
That's all I care about, too. A thoughtful, meaningful apology just sucks all my thunder and lightning right out of me. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, apologize for, I mean, there's no secret. I love you. I'm sorry. Yeah. I love you. You know what I mean? It's just like, I don't understand, like, I misjudged. I thought you were a different guy. Like back in the days growing up, I think he would have done that. But after my grandfather died, I think he just became harder and was like, now you're the son now. Mm-hmm. You're the son now. Now you eat it. I'm the father now. It's like, yeah, let's stop all this. This is crazy. You didn't like it. You hated it. And now you're becoming that? Like, what are we doing?
Right.
But I guess he felt like, now I'm the father and you're the son. Now you eat it and you.
So what after the 8 months happens where you, I'm assuming you took your mom's call probably?
No. We're back in Youngstown. We go back in Youngstown. I'm still not talking to him. We get together as a family event, which is awkward because we're not talking. And
this is the first time for anything like this.
Right. First time like seeing them. So we go to the bar. We're at the event. We go to the bar. We start talking. And he goes, if you wanna start talking again, we can. And I go, I want an apology. He would not apologize, but he did say something that softened me. He goes, look, if you had my life, you would be dead or in jail right now. If you had had the life I had, you know, with my parents, the way that I came up, you would be dead or in jail. And I didn't look at that as a slight. I kind of understood that he's already playing over his head. Like he's doing the best he can. He's playing way over his, basically that's what he was saying. I'm playing way over my head already. You expect me to be at this level where I can see things and be the father you want me to be. I'm already doing more than I possibly ever thought I could be doing. So that softened me to the point where it's like he's just doing the best that he can. So I let up a little bit and then we started talking again. And then he said afterward, he didn't apologize, but he said, the fight that'll never happen again. I guarantee it'll never happen again. So that's a thing where it's like he took responsibility. He's like, he knew he was wrong.
It'll never happen again.
And it didn't.
Listen, I'm going to start using that too. That thing that happened, it'll never happen again.
So when he did that, it softened me. And I tell people that sometimes and they go, how does he know? They take it like, oh, he was trying to, it was a slight. I didn't think it was a slight. I thought it was him basically saying, I'm doing the best that I possibly can.
Dude, yeah. I feel your dad so hard on that, man. I feel like I come from no parents at 16 on, and
I just feel like I'm a fucking twin because of birth or fertility pills. I just feel like I'm on house money.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Were you born first or was your brother?
He was. I'm the second one. I'm the smallest of ever. So my mom's 6 foot, bro.
He was your opener.
He was my opener, bro. Headliner goes second. You know how it goes. You know how it goes. You go ahead out there first. I'm a chilling here for 4 minutes, warm them up, and then I'll make my appearance.
That's
bro.
Great.
But yeah, I feel the same way. Like, I know there's a lot of things people want from me sometimes, and I'm like, I just don't compute. Like, I want you to know that I understand that you're presenting this math word problem to me.
Right.
I don't know how to fucking do that.
Right.
I don't even mean to be a dick about it, or right. I just want you to know my skill set doesn't involve what you're asking of
right,
me.
Right.
And I feel that same way. Like, I can't believe how far I've come going to EMDR therapies and talk therapies yeah. and journaling.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, what?
Yeah.
I'm doing a lot, and I'm doing so much that I'm like, I don't know if I have the capacity for more. I don't want to be an ignorant person or hurt anyone, but
right.
there's only so much I have.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And we're better than our parents
oh,
were.
Oh, my God.
You know? And yeah. the hope is that your kids are, you know,
yeah,
booming
yeah.
a booming a boom.
Right.
Smarter, better, faster, right. stronger, quicker,
right.
you know?
But the therapy and all that stuff, like I went through a bad breakup when I was in my late 20s. And looking back on it, I was like, oh, I should have went to therapy then. But therapy wasn't... I didn't think of therapy the same way
like
as
your
I
dad
do now.
Never went to therapy.
Never
I'm
went
sure.
to therapy. But he went to he did go to a therapist because my sister is a therapist and she got him to go to a therapist after our fight. And the therapist told him he was wrong. And
whoa.
He didn't want to hear it.
It's like, fuck.
Yeah, yeah, he didn't want to hear
is
it.
Is that right?
Yeah. He fired the therapist on the spot. No, but it's like in families,
well,
like if you scratch
you this
the surface
quick.
On anybody's family, it's like there's all of this, there's all of this involved. And I got to say, of all of that, I got a great deal. I got a great deal because I was loved and supported in my whole like childhood and I knew it. And there's some, and this is maybe an Italian thing. I have friends who are Italian whose fathers don't tell them they love them. They don't hug them. And I had a friend, I got into his car and I was talking to my father and I said, okay, I love you. Bye. He's who was that? I go, that's my father. He goes, you say you love you. I love you to your father. I go, yeah. And he goes, I would never do that with my father. And I go, you gotta do it. You got life's too short, man. Life's
you?
Too short. You gotta do it. And there's some people who don't. I'm like, just do it. I don't care if it's uncomfortable. I don't care if it's uncomfortable. You gotta do it. But I fortunately, I always had that.
Was it more difficult not to talk to your mom or your dad during that period?
I was really mad. I was real mad at both of them. So, but it was harder on my mom because my mom was like a casualty kind of it. She was still at fault, yeah. but I look at her like casualty, but it's like, nah, my mom's a real standby your man type.
Yeah.
And I respected her for that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's
the
like
mafia wife.
Yeah. Tell him he's wrong.
We
tell
don't
him
know,
he's talk
we
to
don't
your,
know what you're talking
but
about.
But I apply pressure. I apply pressure. It's like, talk to your guy.
Yeah.
You want to talk to me? Talk to your guy. Talk to your guy. Your guy did was wrong.
Yeah.
What he did was wrong. Talk to him.
So then what happens to your dad? You say
after that, he starts to get sick.
What happened?
He had a respiratory illness before COVID.
Was he a smoker or anything back in the day?
Cigarettes back in the day, but he quit once, you know, he's in his 40s. I think that he quit. And then cigar. He had an obsessive personality. Like if he bought a dog, he would have to buy two dogs and a parrot. I remember we went on a vacation one time. My mother leaves. We all and come back and there's two dogs and a parrot. My mother said, shouldn't have left this guy alone. You know, he had an obsessive and he got obsessive with cigars. He started smoking like 4 or 5 a day. And it's like, how do you think this is going to end? It's not going to end well, you know? So
how old was he?
75. But at 75, like the doctor is a family friend of ours. And the doctor pulled my mother aside. And when he didn't have that long, he was telling her, he's like, be realistic. He only has a couple months here. And my mother's like, all right, just tell your family so everybody knows. And so
your mom broke that news to you?
My mom broke it to me, yeah. Yeah, that he didn't have that long. So, but the doctor did say to my mother, You kept him alive this long. My mother kept him alive. My mom on top of everything, medication. Like, my mom was on top of everything. So, and taking care of him, she goes, and he was a family friend, the doctor, so he knew. He's like, he doesn't last this long if it's not for you. So my mother kept him alive for, I would say, a couple years of just like being a doctor's appointment. My father would have never left to his own devices. It would have been.
Yeah, the doctors I deal with now, they tell me, like, I'm on blood thinners now and it's twice a day. And they're like, look, we could give you the one a day, but it's not a great medication. And also, we give the one a day to the people who forget their fucking socks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was like, yeah. I forget the type of people these doctors see where right. people are just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You're dead.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was that. It was.
So did you get to talk? And
yeah, you know, I spent time with him. I got to go home and I would book gigs in Florida, mm-hmm. and I would go home. I would do the gig and then I would come back and I would just like hang out with them. And boxing is something that we bonded over. I never boxed. I don't know, but he was into it. He was really into box. So I started getting into boxing, and that's something we would watch the fights. Mm-hmm. And when I was in New York at the Garden, like, I got tickets to a big fight and brought him up, and that's we went nice. To a big fight, and it's something we bonded over. So
was it the best you'd ever gotten along?
It was good. It was good because it was good.
Was he still?
He was in pain.
Yeah,
but it was nothing but it was like nothing but love. And we, you know, I don't want the whole childhood. I want to. We had spots where everything was good, and you know, we got along. But then it was tumultuous here, tumultuous there. It would change, but. But yeah, in the end, like, I would lay with them in bed, and I would, I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I went down there and spent that time, because, you know, at his funeral and when he passed, I was like, I have no regrets, you
That's
know,
good.
And there was nothing left to say. There was nothing, you know, there was nothing left to say. He said everything to me. I said everything to him. It was beautiful.
Was there anything he said that just still sticks with you during that time?
I asked him if he would have done anything differently. And he said, and this really shocked me because he never talked this way before. He goes, if I had to do it over again, I would have never given my father that much power over me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That and goes he all,
never ever the, said that before.
Beginning of the trauma right
yeah,
there.
Yeah. He's like, instead of realizing like today, you realize, oh, this is a flawed man. This guy is flawed. Mm-hmm. So I can only do so much here. I could love him. Even from a distance, but I can only do, but to give your mind and heart and soul over to somebody like that, it's like, oh, he's not a bad guy. He's just a flawed guy. So I can't give my mental stability and my everything. Oh, I got my own family. I got my own life. Like, I can't give that over to this much of a flawed guy. He's just a man. He's flawed. But my father didn't look at it like that. He's like, this guy's like a god. Like, he looked at him like, this is my idol. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't get that approval. You know, for so long, and he spent his life trying to get it. And when he couldn't get it, he would spend time like smoking cigars and ruminating over it. I learned that. It's like, oh, don't ever do that. Don't ever do that. Like, deal with it in the moment when you can, and then and make any changes that you need to make. But don't sit and ruminate over the past, because you're wasting your life. And he did that a lot.
A lot.
And he wasted a lot of like time just ruminating, like, what could he have done different? He would have vivid dreams about working for his father and all this stuff. It's like, yeah, that's not good, because you're losing the present moment, you know?
How was your mom after your dad passed? Did she get closer to you? Did she move near you? Or
no, she lives in Boynton Beach, Florida. And my mom's real self-sufficient. Like, she's really like...
She's still healthy and takes care of herself.
She's healthy. She's really healthy. She walks an hour every day. She drives.
All right.
She's good intellectually. Like, her mind is real sharp. My sister is really down there and really keeps an eye on her. And but man, she's self-sufficient and really like, I'm really proud of her. Like, I'm really proud of her. She's unbelievable. She taught for 40 years. Like, we'll go into a grocery store and it'll be somebody from behind the counter who she taught, who's in elementary school, who recognizes her. She's like a small celebrity
in
Publix. But
in Publix, yeah.
She's a Publix celebrity. But she's like steady and just like, you know, goes to church, goes for walks, goes to the casino with her girlfriend, like, just has her life like in order, and mentally, like, really, she's doing well. And she does well.
Another thing I wanted to talk to you about, because I remember, again, in talking to you before, but you were a special ed teacher.
Yes.
What made you want to do that?
It was kind of a process, because I went to Penn State and I got a criminal justice degree. And at that time I was like, oh, I want to be a lawyer, because as you know, with Italians, I think, and with a lot of like ethnic type families, it's like, you're going to be somebody. We didn't have college. You know, my mom went to college to be a teacher, but my father never went to college, never got the opportunity. So the whole narrative is you're going to get educated and you're going to be somebody. And to them, being somebody was a doctor or a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Those are the two things that meant wealth and a professional person that everybody looked up right. to, doctors and lawyers. So I wasn't too good in the sciences. So they were like, you're going to, you know, think about being a lawyer. I think you would be a good lawyer. So I got a criminal justice degree, and then I
Getting paid to argue instead of just arguing what the fuck about
arguing over nonsense. Yeah, yeah. So I applied to a couple law schools. I studied for the LSAT, and my LSAT scores weren't that high. And my SATs were low too, but my LSATs weren't that high, even though I prepared for it, and I didn't get into the places that I wanted to go. And then I started thinking, if this measures how you're supposed to think as a lawyer, do I really know what it is to be a lawyer? I know what it is to be called a lawyer, but it's like guys in stand-up years ago, they would be with Three Arts, and I would be like, how's Three Arts? They go, the best part of being with Three Arts is saying that I'm with Three Arts. Because they were like lower tier guys. I'm not crapping on Three Arts, but they were like lower tier guys. So they would be like, that's the best part of it. And that's the same thing with like being a lawyer, which like saying that you're a lawyer. It's like, yeah, but what is that really? It's like, is it Tom Cruise? Are you arguing in open court and cross-examining? It's like, that's not really what, maybe if you're a trial lawyer, there's some of that, but most of it is like research and books and, you know, figuring it out. So I thought, oh, maybe this is a sign that I'm not supposed to be doing this. Maybe I'm supposed to be doing something else. So I took it as a sign. I went to a summer program. I remember it was a Widener University in Delaware. And I go, you know, if I pass the summer program, then they'll admit you to law school. But if you don't pass, then you're out. You're on the bubble. So I did the program, and I missed it by like 2 points.
Damn.
And I didn't get in. And I go, oh, there's my answer. So I got a job working at a school called Glen Mills, which is for adjudicated boys. And I started working there as a counselor. And I left there, and then I went to another behavioral school for 2 or 3 years. And then I went back at night to get my master's and certification in special education. So I said, if I'm going to do this, I might as well teach. Okay. You know, you can make decent money teaching. And I was good at what I was doing, I felt like. So I
went
back at night.
When you say special ed, are we talking about disciplinary? What kind of special
emotional and learning emotional problems. Learning. But the behavioral school was a wild place to work, because it was kids who lived on campus and were thrown out of Philadelphia schools. And so they lived on campus, and they were either unmanageable by their parents, or their parents abandoned them. So they were waiting for in foster care, whatever. And I worked in the school, and the school was wild, because I was behavioral staff before I got my certification. I would sit in the hallway, and the teacher came out and like, this kid's got to go. Then you would go in, and there was a whole drama. It's like, teacher said, you got to go, you got to go. And then I'm not going nowhere. Like,
you're like, here comes this fucking single leg. Nah, motherfucker.
I would just approach it like this. Hey, I hear you. Because they would be like, fuck you, I ain't going nowhere. I'd go, hey, I hear what you're saying, but he says you got to go. You got to. I didn't even do anything. I don't know. I'm like, I hear you. I hear you. But he says you got to go. You got to go. He's like, look, you put your hands on me, I'm gonna fuck you up. I go, look.
How old are these kids? Because you're 20 something, right? Dude.
No, they're 14 to 18.
And you're in your 20s or early 20s, college. Okay.
Yeah, I'm my 20s, mid 20s. And I go.
Or there anyone that you think could have took you?
Yeah, yeah. Kids were. I mean, there would have been a problem. There would have been a problem with some of these kids, because it's like, people don't understand about restraining. They kind of don't get it. It's not a fight. You're not having a fight. What you need to do as
restraint
is like, you need to overpower the person. You need to overpower them, because that's safe. It looks like you're jumping a person, but if you're restraining a person, it's like you have to overpower them to the ground and secure limbs. Because if you don't do that, then it becomes a fight and then it's dangerous to everybody. Them, you, everybody's in danger. So it's like when people are being restrained in that video of it, I know what it looks like. It looks like you're jumping somebody. But a proper restraint, you have to overpower them mm-hmm. to take them to the ground. So, and it has to be in unison with other people, you know. Unless it's like a smaller person, then you can restrain them yourself. But if it's like a bigger person who's strong, it's like you have to come at with a lot of force and you have to take them to the ground. And then you ease up according to how much they're struggling. See, that's the thing. That's the thing that's hard to judge.
That's what the police are having
right,
a hard time.
That's the police are overwhelming. Yeah. But I will say that you need overwhelming force to bring them down. You can't mm-hmm. come half like halfway or
you're also
you will
getting 150% of that person. You know yeah. what I mean? They're bringing everything.
Yes, you're
they
playing
got.
By yeah. rules. They're playing by no rules.
No rules.
No rules.
And at all their strength.
Right.
Yes.
So
what's the wildest shit you ever saw in there?
I would get bit.
You yeah, ever get spit on?
Spit on. That was a
did you wear the mask or
nah, I would just like
you just be like this out there?
You'd be on the ground. You'd be one person was up top and back then it was a basket hold. I don't think that's legal anymore.
But you don't have any vest for stabbing.
Nah, because it happens kind of on the spot where it's like, okay, this kid needs to leave. He's like, I'm not going anywhere. And then the kid might try to walk off. It's like it might have to be done on the spot. You can't let them just like go. You have
and
to
how many
it.
Of you are there in this school?
There's another person. And then there's other staff there who will help. But as far as taking the lead, which is the toughest thing, it's you and another person, another guy.
You ever have to deal with multiple kids at the same time?
Well, that's the thing. It's like when you go in the classroom and then the kids know what's happening. So if they're like, don't touch him. Don't touch. It's like, all right, you got to step back. You got to step back now. It's like, let's clear the space
and
because they know
they
what's coming.
Today, I bet you everybody's got cell phones doing that shit.
I know. I'm sure. I mean, I don't know how it would work.
Because you're taking a kid down.
You have to take them down. You have to isolate. So, but the argument before always kind of went the same. Fuck you. I ain't going nowhere. It's like, I wouldn't get into a battle with them. Like, take it personal. After I figured out what was going on, I would go, no, I hear you. But I have a job to do. I got to do my job. You want to help me do my job? Fuck you. Fuck your job. I'll fuck you up. It's like, look, I'm being paid to do a job. I try to explain it to him like in a very X's non-emotional way. Yeah, it's like, yeah. I'm being paid to do a job here. I got to do a job. I don't get paid. I get fired. And it's like, sometimes that would resonate and sometimes it wouldn't. And then I would watch other staff deal with it. Some staff would just come at them real hard, like, you do what you're told. And then some staff would pander to them and be like, come on, dog. You know, it's like the, I don't know. My way was to just come at it in a very non-emotional, like, we got to go. And then if we got to go to the ground, we go to the ground. So we go to, it would be, but the threats were pretty
How
funny
often do you
sometimes.
Get into the ground?
Oh, we do every day.
Every day,
because changing classes and all kinds of like the person's
so in
not
the
going
hallway,
to the right place.
They're going by it, he
and
might
the whole
hit
point is,
or,
yeah, yeah. The whole point is like you got to go to. Back then it was timeout. I don't know what they do now, but it was you got to go to timeout room to supposedly calm down, reflect on what you did, which it just turned into a nightmare in there. Mm-hmm. Then
trash,
but
the room.
But at least it wasn't like you could keep the classes
it's isolated.
Yeah, you could keep the classes moving, and so that was it. But the restraints were like. Yeah, they were rough because I was making like no money to do it, like very low money.
Also, it's a physical job. If you're having to literally go out there and tackle,
yeah,
and not a football. Again, football tackle, you're hitting a guy,
man.
Plays over, everybody's right. getting up one by the right. This is the best of this motherfucker who doesn't want to go anywhere.
I almost had an eye taken out because a girl because somebody didn't secure a limb. So it's like you got
to
be on the same page
or something, or she's trying to gouge it out.
Just across my face, just quick across my face, and it cut my face, but it missed my eye. Thank God. But yeah, it's gritty. And then there would be therapists on staff, so they get a timeout, and then they would curse their therapist out. And the worst is like they would have home passes on the weekends, and sometimes the parents would flake and just be like, "I'm not picking the kid up," you know, and then the therapist would have to go in and tell them. It's like 5 o'clock on a Friday.
Oh,
therapist,
God,
I'm getting ready to get out of there. Oh, get ready for my weekend. The therapist comes by and goes, "Look, I got to tell so and so that their home pass is pulled." I'm like, "Come on, dude." They go, "I'll do it, but could you just be in there with me?" I'm like, "All right." So I would go in there and they would be like, "Your mom's not picking you up," and then they would leave, and then they get, and then I would sit there until 7. But it was a wild experience dealing with those kinds of kids. And but you know, after a while I went back at night and got my master's, and then once I started teaching in a public school, I would go back to that program during the summers, and I started instituting my own program. Like, what are these kids interested in? They're interested in the criminal justice system because many of them have relatives and some of them have been through the justice system. So I started doing like what I learned in college, like a criminal justice class, because that's kind of interesting. You're dealing with gangs. You're talking about the legal system. You're talking about first degree crimes. What's mm-hmm. a felony? What's a misdemeanor? And you can teach English and teach the other subjects through that because they're interested. They're interested in that. So I started doing that, and that ended up working really well. And I would have a reward system. Like that was during like the Stone Cold Steve Austin. I would like tape wrestling on a VHS. And if they were good, if we had a good week and everybody got their points, then we would watch wrestling together.
Would they love that?
They loved
shit.
They loved wrestling. Stone Cold, man. The glass would break and they would be like, "That's Stone Cold." Yeah. And so we would do that. We would, and then when I was teaching in a public school too, I would do a reward system. And if everybody who qualified for it, I'd buy them pizza. And I lived above this Italian deli, and I would just buy a bunch of food, and then we'd eat like kings on Friday.
Hell yeah.
If everybody did the right thing.
What would you say you took away from that? Mostly what impacted you most?
It was from my perspective, it was like a different, it was like, wow, we're all, I don't know, these kids had a lot of, because the therapist would come in and read their background, and their backgrounds would make you cry. It's like kids locked up in a basement, fed dog food. It's just terrible, terrible things, you know? So, you were dealing with the manifestation of those behaviors of how these kids were. They didn't come into the world. I don't know if you're like this, but have you ever see a person who's like on the street and they're like going through withdrawal or whatever? It's like that person was a baby at one time. So imagine the things they had to go through to get to that point.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So I look at it from in a sense of compassion from that perspective. Now, that being said, I think that the way that compassionate people deal with it is mostly, from what I've seen, wrong. It's like those people having those experiences, they need even more structure and they need even more of a tight program and discipline so that they have a chance to live like a good life, mm-hmm. you know? So, I mean, compassion comes after like discipline and all of this other stuff in play. That's the most compassionate thing you can do, is have a good organized program and giving them the best chance to succeed. Just giving them what they want and letting them off the hook and because you feel bad for them it's instinctively the thing you want to do, but it's the wrong thing to do. That's what I've learned. It's like, yeah. It's like, show love and compassion through the discipline. It's the most important
thing.
That's
very well said.
Yeah.
Dude, this has been a great episode. I told you before we recorded that I was going to ask you advice, and I'm curious what you're going to say because you're bouncing around quite a bit. What's...
You said you were going to call me a Dago on the air, and you still haven't done it yet.
I appreciate you waiting to the end to say that, though.
You said you promised me ethnic slurs.
I did, yeah. Advice you would give to your 16-year-old self? Everything we talked about,
yeah.
You going bouncing back and forth, your yeah. dad, your grandfather, what would you yeah. tell 16-year-old Mike?
I would say stay focused and be resilient, because I was a very sensitive kid and I would get hurt, you know, whether it's losing and getting pinned in wrestling or and I would have a hard time recovering from that. But it's like, it's okay. Little compassionate self-talk and stay the course. Like, stay the course. And, you know, be resilient. Don't let that sensitivity overtake you. Because I think a lot of kids are like that. They're sensitive kids. It's like, it's good to be that way. It really is. I think it's why we're stand-up comics. It's why we're in this field. But don't let that throw you. Like, and I have to remind myself of that today, you know? So my 16-year-old self, I definitely would have been like, stay the course, be resilient, positive self-talk.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great, dude. Thank you, man. Please plug, promote everything again.
At Comic Mike V on all social media platforms. Please follow me at Comic Mike V because I'm touring and I have a really good hour. It's called The Attractives on YouTube. Please watch it. MikeVecchione.com for dates. At Comic Mike V on all social media platforms. And please watch my podcast. It's Mike Vecchione Investigates. It's available on iTunes. So I can't thank you enough for having me on.
Dude,
I appreciate
it.
I called you and I texted you. You when you were in New York, you were like, hey, when you come out, let me know. Mm-hmm. And I texted you and sure enough, you gave me a date immediately. So I really appreciate that. So
you got
thank
it,
you
man.
So much.
Look, man, I love comedians. You're a great dude. So thanks for doing it. And as always, Ryan Sickler on all social media. Go watch my special Lefty Son. Get your tickets at RyanSickler.com. We'll talk to y'all next week.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.